Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Driving Me Crazy, coming to you live from Beechtree Studios near beautiful Pinehurst, North Carolina. This is the only show where a husband and wife drive, talk cars and life, and still love one another each day. Here's John and Laurie. Or is it Laurie and John? Oh, take it away, you crazy kids.
Good morning. Good morning, Hezzy. Good morning, listeners.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us. I'm happy to say that it's Laurie. Johnny will be here shortly. He's just coming back from an eye doctor appointment. So I get to be the first one to say welcome, and I hope everybody's well and having a good week. But as soon as he blusters in here, we'll hear from him. How are you, Hezzy?
Thank God. Okay. I'm so pleased to have you back because we missed you the last 2 weeks.
Oh, thank you. Yes.
I hope
Johnny
you had a good
and I were
time while you were away.
Well,
yeah.
It was a working trip, really, for both of us.
Yes.
But, you know, it was a certain, you know, getting out of Dodge, so to speak, and a change of scenery. Down in Argentina, where we were, it's fall. You know, it's the opposite seasons.
Yeah.
Down there, and it was beautiful. It was cool and lovely, and we could not have had better weather. And it was a very, very long flight. I mean, it's several connections, but once you get there, you realize, you know, my gosh, I'm in another hemisphere, and it's, you know, quite thrilling. So Johnny's been three dozen times to Argentina. I've only been four. But each time it's a revelation, and I think the one thing we always come away with is how nice the people are. The people are lovely.
Oh, yeah.
Warm, you know, people have time to...
Well, it's interesting because you flew to Cordoba, and
yes.
Relatives from my father's side had left Poland and went to Argentina. I think it was before the war. Before World War II, so just in case people don't know which war we're talking about, because I'm an old guy. So it turns out, so that's where they live, in Cordoba. Unfortunately, I never met them, because every time I was in Argentina, I was there a few times, they were not there. They were on vacation, and we somehow missed each other. But, yeah, I've got family in Argentina, in Cordoba, but not in Buenos Aires.
That's very interesting because so much of the influx from World War II went to Buenos Aires. And many, and a surprising number went down to Patagonia, which will be Johnny's and my next trip. We'll be going. I'll be returning.
Oh,
he's never
you'll
been.
Love it. You will
oh,
love
I,
it.
Oh, I did.
Patagonia
I did
is
love
phenomenal.
It. It is. It's,
okay.
It's another planet. It's just gorgeous. But it's been some time since I was there. But as I said, Johnny never has been there. But, you know, I'll tell you, right now with world affairs, Europe is difficult for many people to determine to travel to.
Yes.
Less so South America because it's that much further removed. So this said, it was seamless. Going through the COVID requirements was seamless.
Mm-hmm.
It's really not getting down, it's coming back into the United States where you reach. We had this experience back in November when we went to England as well. It's not getting into the country. It's coming into our country. And so the night before our departure from Cordoba, we had a doctor come to our estancia and test us for COVID. We had the signed lab report to show. And here's the funny thing. Even though we had gone through all these hoops, nobody asked to see anything. They just said, did you test negative for COVID? And then you say yes.
Yeah.
And actually, coming back, nobody even asked us that. So it's better to be safe than sorry, I suspect. Traveling is much more complicated these days, but it's doable. And going to South America offers such a, as you well know, such a different, you know, aspect to culture and to people, and as I said, climate. It's beautiful. So we're home safe and sound.
It absolutely is. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, you finish your thought because you're more important.
I was, No, I'm not.
And that's all that matters in my mind.
Oh, sure. Be that way. That's all that matters. Well, you are the
I'm quite obtuse, but, you know, but what can I tell you? I just
so
adore
kind.
You.
Oh, well, the feeling is mutual, for sure. No, I was going to look to our flavor of the week, our car of the week, but you finish up the Argentina thought.
Well, no, it was just very interesting because I just love South America. It's always so exciting. I was in southern part of Brazil. You'll just love that. And Bolivia. I've never gone in the northwestern part of the continent. So I've never been to Venezuela, never been to Ecuador. But always further south, Brazil, Argentina, Chile. Those were the places I went to. Loved it.
Well, I recommend it for anybody. I don't recommend Colombia. Quite some concern about safety in Colombia.
Uh-huh.
Bolivia, as you said, is very beautiful, but it's a very poor country. Very, very poor.
Very poor, yeah.
Very poor.
But those hills are
Argentina,
terrific. Those hills are
they're
fantastic.
They're rolling.
You know who I actually met in of all places in Bolivia? It was in La Paz. I actually sat, because I speak German, I heard these two people talking, and they were speaking German. So, you know, I didn't speak Spanish. So I went over and I said, I hear you're speaking German. I speak German too. So, and I was talking to this old guy. At that time, I was much younger, but he was my age at that time. It was actually Klaus Barbie. I spoke to him for a half an hour.
Oh my gosh!
the butcher from France,
the
World War II. Can you imagine?
Did you realize that's who it was? You spoke with him? Oh my gosh!
No, not at all. He was just a nice old guy.
Oh,
go figure!
Goodness!
But,
oh, the secret
know,
lives we have. Oh my goodness!
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in Peru, I was surprised too, because I loved Peru. I went all the way from the north to the south, and there were a lot of people who spoke German as well in Peru. I was surprised. And they have a large Japanese population. Oh, and the food is phenomenal. Oh, my God. It's fantastic. I could live there.
And it's cheaper. Bariloche in Patagonia looks like a German town. There's a huge influx of Germans down in Bariloche in the southern part of Patagonia, Argentina. And
absolutely.
So it's quite interesting to see this influx of different European countries that have come to South America. But no, it was the food. I ended up, I mean, there's nothing like Argentina beef until you've had it for 7 straight days, and then your body says enough is enough.
Well, you know, that's like every place. You can't be a glutton for all
no,
that
it's
stuff
true.
But the food is phenomenal.
It was phenomenal.
I mean, you know,
we
there is something you have to get used to. Argentinian beef, because it's not as fatty as the American beef, which is tasty,
mm-hmm.
But it's much leaner. But I remember in Israel, we used to get beef from Argentina. I guess maybe because the American beef was too expensive. I don't know why,
but it was
imported from Argentina. Yep.
Well,
kosher
it, it
too,
was,
naturally.
It was, yes, of course it would be, but it was. Lovely food, lovely people, lovely place. But we're back home, and today we're going to talk about the 2022 Infiniti QX60 sensory all-wheel drive luxury full-size SUV with 3 rows of seating, as Johnny has just walked into the room.
I can see.
Oh, my God, he knows. It's like a grand entrance. He knows when to step in. My God.
You can see because he just came back from the
eye doctor.
Very good, John. What a pleasure. Great to have you back.
Thank you. It's nice to be back. You know, after they do those light things in your eyes, and it's like torture, and you say, all right, I'll tell you anything you want to know, and then they stop. So it's good to get through that kind of thing. So.
Oh, that's fantastic.
X60, we've been talking about our trip to Argentina.
Oh, all right. Well, that was a wonderful experience and certainly a lot cooler than the 96 we're expecting today.
Mm. Well, you need to reacclimate to Pinehurst.
Well, no, we have the air conditioning set at like 72. I'm not reacclimating.
Oh, okay.
We're just not going
okay.
out.
Yeah, right.
Before we start talking about the 2022 Infiniti QX60 all-wheel drive luxury full-size SUV with 3 rows of seating, I just want to give a little background about Infiniti. I'm sure that many of our car enthusiasts know this, but who don't, this may prove somewhat interesting. So Infiniti is the premium brand of Nissan.
Yeah.
And it's introduced in the United States in 1989. I remember well. I remember when it came in, everybody was wondering, what the heck is this? I mean, Nissan was not known for a design.
Right.
They had their Plaza Accord. You remember the Nissan Accord in 1985?
Yeah.
It was known as a very affordable, kind of a low-end car, and then in comes the Infiniti. So the brand came out at the same time as its Japanese rivals, Toyota and Honda, which came out at the same time with Lexus and the Acura brand. So all of a sudden we're seeing out of the Far East these luxury brand cars that are now in competition with Mercedes S-Class, the BMW 7 Series, the Jaguar XJ, and the Cadillac Fleetwood. Were four-door sedans. Well, needless to say, Infiniti has really come up in the world. It's accepted as one of the great luxury brands, and to be quite honest, that was how we felt about this vehicle. This is absolutely sensational. This is a gorgeous, gorgeous SUV. It was a delight. It was a pleasure to drive.
Take a breath.
I'm going to take a breath. and it was,
well, you know,
it was a
in reading the review, I was overwhelmed, and it just smacked of luxury and eloquence. It was unbelievable. I don't think I've read a review that was so beautiful, because the vehicle was so fantastic.
But a quiet luxury.
I was taken aback.
A very quiet luxury. It's not an in-your-face. You know, we get some of these cars that look like they've been pumped with testosterone.
Or they're spaceships.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just say this, and then you can go on. The thing that really struck me when we drove in and saw the vehicle was, what an attractive. Mm. The word that came to mind was handsome. My gosh, what a handsome vehicle. What an attractive vehicle this is.
Yeah.
And then in the review, you remember, I quoted from Infiniti, who said basically in their own promotion, said basically the same thing. It's a super-looking vehicle. And it just happens to be a luxury vehicle. But I mean, it's a really good-looking vehicle. And then you've got all these other things. Go, honey.
The thing that caught me inside and out was, you know, as I said, it's a quiet luxury. The lines, exterior lines, the body is very fluid, but there's no big pumped-up, you know, wheel hubs or lots and lots of trim. It's the grill is sedate. It's not like some that we've been seeing lately that look like they came out of a Superman comic book.
But it's attractive. It's
terribly attractive.
Yeah.
And inside is very you slide into the seat and say, "Wow, this is class."
Well stated elegance, I think.
Right. So quiet.
Yeah, that's
luxury.
It's very. Yeah, exactly. It's like buying jewelry at the finest stores. You know, it's like you can buy jewelry everywhere, but, you know, it's one company. It just seems that they have reached a automobile manufacturing. And I like that subdued luxury. It's not ostentatious.
So what I'm going to talk about, I'm going to spit out the specs on the engine and then have Johnny speak about it.
All right.
Just say it. Don't spit out.
Okay, I'm going to just say it. Here we go. Engine Time is a premium unleaded V6 engine with a 3.5-liter displacement, 295 horsepower.
Okay, I want to talk about it.
Wait,
right there.
Oh, no, you're going to stop. I've got just one more to go.
Okay.
I love. And 4,000 torque. All right, honey, what do you want to add?
One of the things that I always talk about when we talk about these big vehicles or good-sized vehicles is so many times they're underpowered. And as many of the listeners know or readers know, and because I've talked about it many times, I have a 2010 Ford Edge. It's not the biggest one. It's a Ford Edge. But it has a six-cylinder in it. It's never left me wanting for power. The nice thing about this QX60, they put a six-cylinder in it, and not just a six-cylinder, but one with 295 horsepower. So they've given it a good engine, not the greatest engine, but they've given it a really good engine. And I said in the review, and I really think that they did this to preserve the mileage, because in this vehicle you get 25 miles to the gallon on the highway, 20 around town, so it has an average of like 22 miles per gallon, which is really good. But if eyeing this vehicle, and I know they kept it at a reasonable price, the one that we have, which is the Sensory, and I gave you all the models under the QX60, but the Sensory all-wheel drive is like $58,000, which is not cheap, but it's also, for a luxury car, it's not very expensive. Now, would I, if I were buying one of these, pay more than that to have an eight-cylinder in it? The answer is yes. Because when I buy a luxury vehicle, I'm not really looking at the gas mileage. I buy a luxury vehicle because I want to feel like I'm driving a luxury vehicle. I want to enjoy the luxury vehicle. And if I want to tow something or I want to have power to get on the highway from a standing stop, whatever it might be, I want instant response. The V6 295 has plenty of power, but it's not immediately responsive. It's got a 9-speed transmission. When you step down on it, it does give you lots of power, but it's that hesitation when the V6 is saying, okay, wait a minute, we got to rev up, and then it does it. I mean, but if you have a V6 like in the right size vehicle, there is no response time. You step down and it goes. And it's the same with a V8. In this particular vehicle, I would really think it would be over the top if it had a V8 engine, because then when you step down on it, it is immediately responsive. And so what if the gas mileage is 18 miles a gallon, 17 miles a gallon? So what? I know gas prices are very expensive. I understand all that. But where do people do most of their driving in a vehicle like this? They drive like we do. They drive from home to various places probably within 20 miles. Think about it. You know, one of the great surveys that was ever done was they studied where accidents took place, and they said 95% of all accidents take place within 5 miles of where a person lives. Why? Because that's where people drive. You know, it's within 5 miles of where they live. And I think that's true even today, especially now that so many people are not going to the office, are working from home. They've diminished the amount of miles that they need, which is, again, why electric cars have gotten so popular. That's a whole other topic. But this is a beautiful, beautiful vehicle. Is it fine with a V6, 295 horsepower? Yes, it is. Would I like something a little more?
Darling.
A little more? Yes, I would.
You're on a roll. Just hold on a minute. But don't you think that the fact that the automatic transmission has a overdrive that you can, you know, don't you think that helps with the, you know, regulate the power of the engine?
No, it helps with the mileage.
All right. Listen, since I, you know, we're both so enthusiastic, but I'd like to kind of segue into the body.
Oh yeah, talk about all the luxury and wonderful things about it.
Well, here's what I what captured me. It's a 7-passenger capacity. It's 3 rows of seating. Now, it has 41 inches of headroom in the front, slightly less as you go to the back, because the design of the body is, I don't know how to describe it, but it's
slightly tapered.
It's tapered, exactly. Now, the third row, which is always a conundrum in these two-row, I mean, there are certain people such as myself who, you know, have to use a crowbar to get into a third row of most of these cars.
We don't even try.
We don't try, but having said that, the third row has 28 inches of legroom. The second row has 36 inches of legroom, very spacious. And the front row has 44 inches of legroom. So, to be quite honest, I think that one of the reasons why, as you say, they tapered the design is to be able to afford more legroom in all three rows than you would normally see in a three-row car. What do you say, Johnny?
Yes. I tell you, from a driver's standpoint, from a passenger standpoint, first two rows, I never thought once about hitting my head when I got in. I never felt crowded. It's incredibly comfortable. It had air-conditioned seats, of course, and we ran them most of the time because, again, it's been warm here. It's just, and I got to say this. This vehicle also had massaging seats. To me, that's the mark right there. You hit that mark, you've gone somewhere. So
then you've got your spa car, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. It's just, so the first and second seats, the passengers, the second row seating set, plenty of room for people and space and all that.
Third row, no. Lower for sun, tinted windows throughout. Johnny, do me a favor, tell me what the MSRP for the base prices for this model?
For this particular model, which is the Sensory all-wheel drive, it's $56,350.
Now, was that what we were driving, or is that...
Yeah, no, that's what we were driving.
What was the base model? Do you have that on the sheet?
It's on my review.
I think it's review. $46,000?
It was $47,000.
Okay, here you go. I want to go through some of these, some of this equipment, because... if you are buying the base model, you need to know what you would need if you go up, as we had, with a fully loaded vehicle. You can get a trailer hitch receiver for this vehicle, which is great if that's the lifestyle that you lead. You're towing a boat or whatever, but that's optional. The backup camera is optional. I thoroughly recommend that you get, upgrade to one of the levels where it's not optional, or get that option. The heads-up display is optional. The heads-up display is terrific in this vehicle. The luggage rack is optional, and I can give and take a luggage rack, to be quite honest, because, frankly, if you put down the second and third row, as we had done, there's so much storage. I don't think you need it. You just have to plan what you're doing. The electrochromic rear-view mirror is optional, but...
Wait a minute. When you talk about optional, not on the one we drove.
No, on the base model.
Right, on the base model.
On the base model.
By the time you get to this one, the Sensory AW, you have all of that stuff. It's still only $56,000.
So let me now read through the list of what is in the fully loaded vehicle, now that I've told you the options on the base model. Here's what we had in our vehicle. I'm going to go through the list point by point real quick, because we actually don't have much time. Alarm, car alarm, the backup camera, cruise control, adaptive cruise control, which is really important, especially in traffic, the heads-up display, vehicle anti-theft system.
Love this. It was a simple heads-up display, too.
Very.
It was just below your vision, but it was just enough that you knew the speed, you knew the traffic signs, you knew what was going on without having to focus on it. I like this heads-up display very much. Yeah.
Some of them are so congested on the screen, on the windshield, that you don't know what the heck you're looking at, the road or the display. Auto-off headlights, always good. Keyless start, they all have it. Luggage rack, like I said, you can give or take.
Those. Did you mention the windshield wipers?
No, I'm getting there.
Yeah, let me we'll jump to that, because that's one of the things. But we had the rain, and I love this feature on any vehicle. But the fact that it recognizes it's raining, and then it'll recognize how hard it's raining. So it increases the speed of the wipers based on the amount of rain. And we had significant rain there for a couple of days.
And those wipers are actually three different options. They come with all vehicles. But it's an intermittent wipers, rain-sensing wipers, and variable speed intermittent wipers. Those are three different things that all affect the wipers, and it's standard with all models of this vehicle.
And it's really helpful.
Okay, so carrying on here, because I want to kind of get through this list. Rear parking aid, that's always important. Power lift gate, for a car this size, it's absolutely necessary.
Well, that's the one, too, that you just use your foot, didn't it? When it was in the
hands-free lift.
Yeah, hands-free, right.
Seat massage, Johnny's all about it.
Yeah.
Remote engine start, Johnny's all about that, too.
Yeah. Cold days, you don't think about that unless it's cold. And then if it's cold and you have a remote start, you can warm your vehicle up before you ever get in it. I think that's cool.
The adjustable steering wheel, I'm all about. I love raising a steering wheel up. I don't like, you know, it close to my leg, gnashing my knees. So that. Then steering wheel controls. That takes a little time to sort out, but, yes, you have controls on the steering wheel. Leather-wrapped steering wheel, very good. Heated steering wheel, great in the winter. Trip computer, if you're taking a long-distance trip, of course. Remote trunk release, that's fine, but I have to say that when you're standing in the back of the car and releasing the trunk, you don't have to search for it. It's within the design of the car. It's right there. Beautiful. Universal garage door opener, we have a carport, so we don't know. We talked about the wipers. Keyless entry, power door locks. Heated mirrors in the winter, very important in the northern states and even for us in the winter. Mirror memory, that's on a per-driver basis. You know, where's that mirror going to lock when you yourself get in versus when Johnny gets in, where different, you know, sizes, obviously. Power folding mirrors, very important if you're going into a garage or something of that nature.
Oh, I think that one, it needs to be more common simply because when you park, parallel parking or not parallel parking, when you're parking at an angle with other vehicles, I've noticed that when those mirrors turn in, you have a lot more walking space between the vehicles and you don't bump into somebody else's rearview mirror.
Very good.
Yeah.
Both vanity mirrors and the front passenger and driver are lighted, really good power steering, of course. It has all the options that you'd ever want in the entertainment area of any vehicle, and they're all part of even the base model. The radio, it's a Bose system, it's fantastic. Wi-Fi, smart device integration, da-da-da. That's all and everything. Navigation and communication, I believe, is also standard. The navigation system is great, and the screen is fabulous. I love these screens that aren't like at one with the dash, but they're sort of mounted up. That's how navigation screens started in the days of Volvo, 20-some-odd years ago, maybe longer. But I love a screen that looks like it's a screen sitting on the dash but not integral to the dash.
Let me just say a word about hooking up the phone, because I always hook up the phone. I think that's important, you know, how that works and how easy it is. This is very easy because on it you just add a new phone, you click on your phone, and it basically does all of the things for you. You only push a button, and it really get your phone, get your list of people, all those kinds of things, messages, anything like that. Very simple, excellent setup.
Now, let me just get through this list because we have very little time left. These second row seats are
heated.
Yes, but they're also bench seats, and the third row is a bench seat, which is great. All the safety features, but interestingly enough, I mean, every safety feature imaginable is in this vehicle as standard equipment, with the exception of auto-leveling headlights. And I love those. So, I mean, if you get a option package, then you'll get those auto-leveling headlights. But in the dark, when you're going around a corner and they switch around and you can see what's on your side and what's in front, I think that they're pretty good. But, again, it's just a personal, you know, preference. So those are the options. That's what this vehicle comes with. It comes with a ton. It's gorgeous. Johnny, what do you want to close with?
For a luxury vehicle of this size and this quality, whatever I said, $56,000 is an excellent, excellent price for something like this. Just a lot of vehicle for the money.
Five stars out of five stars.
Yeah.
And as we close, because we are now going to close, I do want to say that I joined the world in congratulating Queen Elizabeth II on her 70-year reign. Today is the first day of her
celebrations.
She is the woman I admire most of every woman on the planet, and I wish her Godspeed and health. And that's us for this week.
Thank you, guys.
I'm not saying
what a pleasure.
Thank you, Ezzy.
Thank you,
Lori. Always good
Thank
to talk
you, John.
To you, my friend.
Good to have
right,
you
buddy.
Back.
Thank you
well,
so much.
Healthy.
We'll talk to you all next week. Everybody be safe. Be cool.
Hey, electric car next
Take
week.
Take care.
Yep.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Hezzy. Goodbye, everybody.
Always exciting. Thank you. Goodbye. Well, let's bring in Brian Harrod, who's waiting online. Good morning, Mr. Harrod. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. And yourself, Hezzy?
Thank God. Okay. Well, we should have, before just, you know, I'm very familiar, you know, with you. So, but we should tell everybody that you're the publisher and the editor of Yonkers Newswire. And very, very much focused on the local environment in every shape and form. So, first of all, how are you doing? I haven't spoken to you in a couple of days.
Yes, I fortunately, medical appointments and some other issues got in the way, but I'm glad to be back on your show. And I have no complaints, except for maybe it's going to rain today. You know, it looks nice out there now, but apparently it's going to turn bad, and then maybe tomorrow and the rest of the weekend's pretty nice.
It's true, very true. Well, you brought up a lot of issues which are really very, very exciting of what's happening in Yonkers and very local stuff. One of the things is very interesting, and I always look forward to it, is the annual Yonkers Car Show, which is going to be on in 10 days. And then there's a rain date of June 26th if it doesn't work out on the 12th of June. What do you do from the 12th of June to the 26th of June with the car?
You know, I'll
do
this. I
guess you keep it garaged.
You know, I know there's a lot of car enthusiasts, but you listen to this show that you just had on with this, you know, they're
yeah.
talking about all the features on this car from air-conditioned seats to heated
yeah.
steering wheels to controls on the steering wheels to remote opening of the tailgate. I could go, she went on for like 15 minutes. It's so feature-packed,
right.
that car. But this charity car show by the Yonkers Rotary is for students who want to go into, I guess, the automotive repair field. And I guess you need pretty much
mm-hmm.
a college degree now because there's so many
yeah.
features, you know. And the mirrors that automatically close, you know, as you park and, you know, and plugging your phone into it, what have you. You know, it's not your basic automobile anymore. So I think the benefit of this show at the Cross County Shopping Center with the Yonkers Rotary is to provide scholarships and then also for people who are just car enthusiasts that like to show off their cars or go see, remember cars.
Well, you know,
I remember
Brian,
my dad
I never
had that
realized,
car.
I never realized how expensive the tools are that are required by the students who would go into the automotive programs.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea that it was that expensive.
Yeah.
Evidently it is.
And it appears to be something. I hate to compare it to the medical trade, but with the way technology keeps advancing, you know, a car today
oh, yeah.
is not the same as 5 or 10 years ago. I think you're going to have to go back for, not refresh courses, but additional courses. You know, where you got to keep up with the field. I guess
yes.
through this, it's well, they don't call them cars anymore. They call them platforms. You know, it's a
uh-huh.
It has so many things in it that are just focused around you. But you know, it's a good thing. One thing I like about the Yonkers Rotary, they do some international projects, and then they do an awful lot
mm-hmm.
of local projects. And events they sponsor, and they also you know, distribute food and once a month they do go and bag food up for to be delivered
mm-hmm.
to seats. And almost every event they're involved in or they sponsor, mostly they write checks an awful lot. You know, they're a group, they raise
mm-hmm.
money of local businesses and business people and some politicians, and they just kind of, I know they have a wine and cheese thing, a few things. They raise money, and then they this, and I guess this is to be able to provide scholarships for people who want to go into the automotive field.
Mm-hmm. Really,
it's
fascinating.
Amazing. Who would have thought at the turn of the century, 2000, 2005, that you would need a scholarship to get the education you need to maintain an automobile? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we've come to a different time in space. I'm from the old crowd, you know, it was really simple. But
yeah.
Now the sophistication is unbelievable. And you need a degree in understanding
yes.
what's going on, which is fascinating. I've got to get that call, but maybe you could talk about some other issues with regard to what's going on in your world.
Why don't I
mention
the related wife while you get to do that call, okay?
No, I'm not going anywhere. I'm answering the doorbell.
Okay.
So I'm good. I can hear you.
All right. The Relay to Life, I believe, is happening, I want to say, this Friday here in Yonkers. It's over at Groton High School. And different teams walk around the track to raise money for cancer. And pretty much everybody knows somebody in their family or even have survived cancer or have had a family member pass away from cancer. And it's just a fun day. I know they have the Boy Scouts out there doing events with kids. I think they have like a bouncy house. And they put up like a memorial in the stands for people who have survived, I guess, cancer, for cancer survivors or to remember, kind of like a legacy to remember cancer survivors. And I also want to say I think they also line the track with these lighted candles or what have you. And it's an event that Yonkers has done, I want to say, 17 years or so, I think I heard or read. I've never waited to even.
Thank you. I'm sorry about yesterday.
But
I think it's
a good thing in Yonkers that we have this this event. And I think they do it all across the country. But it's Yonkers really shows up and really raises a lot of money for cancer research.
Well, that is fascinating. Unfortunately, I wasn't looking at my computer, which would have everything while I was picking up my my meds from the door. So bear with me a second because I'm going to get there in another moment. And this way I'll be able to find out because we have a whole list of items to cover today,
yes.
which I found really interesting.
You know,
so
I heard
a
thing the other day while you're looking. I'll mention something that's about related to this event.
Go ahead.
I was listening. I think it was a National Public Radio or something last night. I was just listening to the radio while I was working.
Uh-huh.
And it was talking about years ago, maybe you probably remember this, like the 70s and 80s, that there was going to be this big population explosion and it would outstrip the resources and we were going
yes,
to be in dire straits.
That.
We were going to be in end days. And they were, why didn't this happen?
Yes.
You know, these dire predictions of the 70s, why didn't they come true now? And one of the things was that, you know, crop yields went up a great deal, you know, even though some people might not like the genetic modifications. Also that people are having less children. You know, a lot of people moved into the cities and you just don't have big families like you would have had maybe in the 60s
right.
and 70s. And they listed like about
exactly.
five or six things. But the question became, what could reverse this? You know, what could cause this to, you know, start to be a problem again? And one of the things they mentioned was a cure for cancer. You know, if they cure cancer and some diseases, then the population might start going up. Actually, in Latin America, they were pointing out the population had been decreasing continent-wise. And even in the U.S., we've natural-born population has decreased. We kind of gain people from immigration. And, you know, Japan's notorious for this type of thing, of less, you know, not producing enough people to maintain their society and getting a very old society. But this event that I was talking about.
You know, people can't afford the children that they used to have. At one time, the children were part of the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you raise children, and at a very young age, they were working. And they helped support the family structure. But
yeah.
that became unaffordable.
Yeah, as we became urbanized, they became another mouth to feed.
Now you find only one child or two.
Yeah.
You don't usually find three or four or five kids in a family. It's very rare.
Yes.
So it's expensive to raise a child to the point of getting an education where they can actually create a life for themselves and find a partner and maybe set up a family structure. Those are the issues. They're very, very financially driven.
You know, my wife and I raised two children, and we raised the children of some other people, the friends or people that she knew from religious groups and stuff, but, they had temporary problems. But I don't know if I could do it today, Hezzy. You know, it's the days of, look, go play. I can't take anymore. You know, go outside. It's gone. You know, if you were to leave your child in an aisle in a supermarket to look at toys or magazines while you shopped, someone's going to call, the TV channels and the police department on you. You know, it's just you need play dates. You need this. You need that. I see people that they get out of work, their kids are with them, you know, 4 or 5 hours to 6 hours till they put them in bed. You know, it's just it's quite a demanding task nowadays to raise a child. And maybe because I'm getting older and more of a curmudgeon, but I'm like, I just couldn't. I don't think I could do it nowadays.
I think it's a question of age. You know,
yes,
there comes a point in life where it's too tiring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's face it, you probably have a child in your early 20s, and so by the time they grow up, but they're really not out of the house, it could be you're already 50.
Yeah.
And before you know it, and the burden, the financial burden of going to school if they don't get a grant or something like that, is quite formidable for them as well as for the parents.
And that's the other thing.
If you think about it, both parents are working nowadays.
You know, this is probably the reason for this. But like I started having children very young, you know, in my 20s. But now I see people just starting to have children at an age when my children were just almost out of the house. You know, people start very, very late. Maybe it's the two income households that cause this late childbirth.
Yeah,
you know?
That too.
Yeah, it's
women used to be at home and they took care of the home, but they also took care of the children because the husband was a caregiver and they could afford to have a family, to pay for a family and to rent or buy a home. That's no longer doable on one salary. Not everybody is earning $200,000 a year. You know, people are scraping by at $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, and who knows for less. And costs are through the roof. I mean, considering even from 5 years ago.
Yes.
Hey, look at gasoline prices.
Well, just I think in general the inflation. You know what $100 bought you a year or so ago, it's now probably cost you $110, $115, $120 maybe, if you in extreme cases.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so absolutely. Actually, my mother, she has a pretty good, yard size, and she rides this riding lawnmower around, she takes this little plastic container, to get the gas to fill up the riding lawnmower. And she was complaining that it cost darn near $25, you know, to fill up a 5-gallon container of gas.
Really?
So, yeah. This is in Missouri. So, you know, just to run the lawnmower, I don't know how long she'll run the lawnmower on that 5 gallons, probably a while. But she experienced some sticker shock because maybe it used to be like half of that price, you know, type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a major burden. And we need to resolve that issue.
Especially people on a fixed income.
Not.
You know, if you're a senior, retired, that type of thing, and your income's fixed, that's who really gets hurt with inflation. You know, of course, obviously poorer households too, but fixed income households, and especially with seniors, it's very hard to you're usually buying this only the stuff you need anyway. You're not really being frivolous, and so when those things go
absolutely
up, you're on a fixed income, it hits pretty hard.
Well, I did get back to my iPad, so I noticed here you mentioned that there are 10 commandments, of which there's cheesecake and the 10 commandments for the holiday that's being celebrated. Rabbi Mendy Hurwitz at the Grayson Jewish Center, and he's part of the Chabad of Yonkers, so he's having a special commemoration for the holidays at 11:30 in the morning on Sunday, June 5th. So why the cheesecake? Do we know?
I believe you probably are – I should be more up on this. I know that this holiday, usually they show grain an awful lot, that there's a big harvest type
mm-hmm.
of thing. And I believe with the Orthodox, there's a thing about you stay up and you study the Torah, maybe the Ten Commandments a great deal, and you're consuming these dairy products. And Rabbi Mendy mm-hmm. – to his credit, he actually makes Judaism fun. You know what I'm saying? It's a very strict code, and he's always coming up with something to entice people to come to visit or to encourage them to visit.
Well, Do you know why they
that?
Do? When the Bible was given, when the Torah was given to the Jewish people, supposedly God said that they should go to the land of milk and honey.
Ah.
How do you combine milk with honey, and what do you get from it? You get cheesecake.
Ah, there we
so
go.
So if you combine the milk and the honey together, that's where that stuff comes from.
I see,
so that's how it became the cheesecake thing. And in America, they have I forgot the name of the two brands of major cheesecakes that are, I think they were originated in Brooklyn. There's a company called Junior's. I've never eaten their cheesecake. So these are supposedly very, very, high-end cheesecakes. They're supposedly really terrific.
I see.
I remember I used to have an aunt who lived, she's now long gone. She lived in Brooklyn, but she moved out to Arizona. And I remember once went with her and the family to this place where they served the cheesecake. And I had never had cheesecake in my life that tasted like that. It was terrific.
Oh, really?
You know, it was unbelievable. So,
that's one thing people will remember.
I haven't had cheesecake in a long time.
There's a couple of things people remember. You know, they might not remember your name, but they'll remember how you made them feel, or they might not remember what they had for breakfast, but they'll remember that slice of cheesecake that was so good, I never forgot about it, or that steak that was so this, you know. They will remember an old, an exceptionally good meal, but they might not remember what they had for lunch today.
You bet. Well, talking about other things of culture, you also mentioned that sculptor Vinnie Bagwell, she's a local artist and a community leader. She's going to unveil the enslaved Africans' rain garden along the waterfront at 20 Water Street. That's Friday on the 17th. That's about 2 weeks away from today at 11:30 in the morning. That's really fascinating. She's literally been part of the legacy of Yonkers. She's really made an impact, I think.
I've never met her, but I've read a great deal about her. But I believe she's.
I've never met her either.
She's visually impaired, and I know she's been working on these bronze statues. I guess she forks them out in clay ahead of time, and they've been displaying some of them in the library. And way before I came to Yonkers, which I guess about 5-6 years ago, she was already doing this for maybe another 5-6 years before that, and she's finally finished it. And I know she's been commissioned for some other parks and here in New York, and I think even north of us in one of the little communities above, like maybe in Greenberg section, they hired her for a for a slave cemetery to do some kind of artwork there. Mm-hmm. But she's highly talented, visually impaired, and highly acclaimed. People seem to seek her out for projects, but she's kind of a one-woman shop, so she can only produce so much. It took a while to produce all these statues for the city of Yonkers, but apparently it's going to be down
absolutely
by the Hudson.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that's about all I know. But I've seen when with when she's interacted with people on social media, she seems to be a very pleasant and kind person too. So, but I just don't know her much myself.
Yeah, I've never met her myself. I've only seen her work.
Very detailed.
Yeah, definitely. Wanted to also ask you about this the bear sighting, which evidently is still roaming the neighborhood near the Dunwoody Golf Course. Are people scared of that, or do we even know why the bears are coming into Yonkers? Is it too difficult for them to find food north
of here?
That's
what I was going to guess, Hezzy. You hate when I assume, but I assume that you know, once the population gets a little larger, tend to wander a little bit more. It's kind of like the deer, you know. And then I don't know if there's any programs to call bears. Maybe where I came from, where I was born and raised, you know, a bear comes wandering around the property. Well, it's dinner, you know. But the here, they're allowed to roam free. And I guess the object will be eventually to tranquilize this thing and transport it upstate. But I assume they just follow the parkways and golf courses and wooded areas. And it's amazing, I guess, you can go down all these trails and end up in Yonkers, you know. They kind of put an end to it. Once they hit such an urban area as Yonkers, it kind of puts an end to their roaming. But
But evidently a lot of people are coming up to Yonkers. Maybe the bears do. They want to see what's going on here.
They heard about the great condos on the waterfront.
Yeah, exactly. That must be it. You know,
it's almost like
maybe
a Yogi Bear cartoon.
The movie studio.
Yes,
maybe they want to look at a part in a movie.
Yes.
You never know.
Yeah.
So who knows what's going on.
I was joking with a person on Facebook. This is a Facebook friend. I've never met either. But his name is Mike Roon, and I said he's talking about he's at the Dunwoody Golf Course. So I said, you better take a shotgun with you when you go or something. And then he said actually the bear had left the course and was in this neighborhood next to the golf course because he'd hit an errant golf ball and it hit him in the head, you know, kind of thing. We were joking back and forth, but it caused a little bit of a stir. You know, people, it's not something you see every day that you know, wild animals are around Yonkers. So, a bear could be provoked too. Usually, they just want to get away from you, but it could be provoked.
Yeah,
so it's possibly dangerous too. It might not be good if your little puppy goes out barking at it. You know,
Well, you shouldn't keep your puppy out there.
Yes.
You know, especially since you know that there are all kinds of animals that are out there that could conceivably hurt them. So if you want to protect them, you got to keep them indoors or protect them some other way.
You know, apparently down by the casino, and that's the same area, really, Dunwoody, that section of town,
yeah.
I guess with the parkways and stuff. They say coyotes wander down that way in a little bit. And some people have said that they think, you know, you always see these missing dogs, my dog's missing, that they think it might be coyotes getting these very small pets. People like a little, a very small, like, house pet. You're in an apartment, so you like a lap dog, I guess, you know. So I've heard people say
point is that you can't leave them outdoors like that because there's no protection unless you want to create some sort of a cage for them where there's a lot of space for them to wander. You don't feel like they're penned up in something like 3 feet by 4 feet, you know, where it's really like a prison. But otherwise, they should be in the house.
Yeah.
Just because people think that they're protecting the dog from running off the property when they have these silent alarms, but the coyotes and other animals, they're not thwarted by that. They see a meal.
Yeah.
So they're going to go through it. So I don't even know if they hear it.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about something else, which is really interesting about this woman who by the name of Adrian Simpson, which you mentioned in your litany of so many things that are so exciting. She was out of work. She's 72 years of age, and she applied for a job at the Charter School of Educational Excellence in Yonkers. I'm already 72, but I never applied for that job.
Oh, you're still working.
Even though I'm more than qualified.
Pretty much 7 days a week, Nancy. You're doing
exactly,
this show.
But God bless her. I
admire her.
Yes. But she retired at 60. Now she is 12 years later. She says, I've had enough of retirement. And she's gone back into the fold. I think that's wonderful. How exciting that she could be so engaged.
And she's going into to schools. One, kudos to the school. Hats off to the school for just being open-minded to give whoever wants a shot at it, you know, the most qualified person. And apparently
right.
she had a lot of qualifications from being at the hospital, I think, in White Plains. But seniors now, you know, it used to be, I can't wait till I hit 65 and retire, and I want to move to some, I don't know, rural town for my last five or 10 years or sit on the beach. But it's not that way anymore. People are living in their 80s and longer, and people are vibrant and looking to do things. And I'm getting older. My wife's older, and we still keep pretty active. You know, it's just not. I can't imagine that I don't do something. I have to do something while I'm retired. You know
exactly. What do you do in retirement? You veg out? I mean, I don't know.
I don't know
what that is.
If you don't
use it, you lose it pretty much.
I guess that's where you pretty much get put in the corner with a bowl of oatmeal. You got to keep busy to keep your faculties about you.
Absolutely. I think that's the secret of life and enjoying it. Because to be honest with you, I think my capacity to speak and my language and just being doing my daily routine, which is more than just being in the house or going here or going there, it requires a lot more engagement. And you become sequestered too. Quite often a lot of people lose their spouse at a particular age. And you can't live on your own. You really need people. I think we've recognized that with COVID, with everybody's divided. You don't even see anybody. You don't kiss anybody. You don't hug anybody. It's, these are tough times.
Yes.
And I think the old people are suffering a lot from it.
I agree.
More than the younger ones.
That, I'm married, and I'm married to a very good woman. But, you know, where people
evidently
had cabin fever, I wanted to go out and know the world. Honestly, I can't wait to come home. I hate to actually go to things.
Exactly.
But, you know, I have to do things. You need to do things as part of life, or even the type of work I do requires me to go out at times, or even just medical appointments and what have you. But I enjoy home, to be honest with you. I enjoy home, being home with the wife, and if we do anything, we do it together. So it's just it was similar to the couple you had on before, you know, that they
drive each other crazy and they love each other.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. That's the way it's supposed to be.
They're a good example too of just keeping active in their senior years and taking on pretty complicated technology. Actually, if I got a new vehicle, like they're describing, I don't think I would use 3/4 of the features on it. I wouldn't even want to try to figure out how to use them. I just want to get from here to there in the car, you know. But the
I remember I used to be down at 56 Main Street, and there was the guy who owned the building. It turned out he bought a BMW. And what was interesting is after about a year of having the car, he got rid of it. He hated it. And the reason he hated it was because, and he eventually got, I think, one of those big GMC, like a, I forgot, I don't remember the model, but
like
it was like
GMC,
a really
GMC
big
kind of thing. Yeah,
like something like that. Really one of the biggest that they had. And he said that the BMW was so sophisticated that he really could never get a handle over it. It was too sophisticated for him, and I could see it driving people crazy, because I find that I sometimes go crazy trying to figure out what to do with this, that, or the other. They constantly update the stuff on the internet, and it goes wacky for days, and I don't always know how to figure it out. I feel ignorant on such a high level.
Sometimes the stuff is too sophisticated. To plug my phone into the car and use like that. I guess if you're in the car an awful lot, you know, maybe if you're sales or it requires a great deal of driving, then you I would use these features. Or maybe you're going on a vacation and the kids might want to use them some. But I'm pretty much a point-to-point person and don't have to travel a great deal. But if I did get a car with all that kind of features, they have this
wonderful program where you can actually go on your cell phone. It's called Waze, W-A-Z-E.
I'm familiar.
And
yes.
It tells you how to travel from one place to the next, and it warns you when there are problems on the road, or when there are police on the road, or there are all kinds of other things and detours, and it tells you how to travel, and it finds, and it's all based on everybody on the road advising people of what's happening on the road. So it's like having other people and other eyes of people traveling on the route that you need to take to get wherever you're going. It's really fascinating.
Similar to CB of the 70s, but it's just automated into a digital graph.
Yeah, exactly.
Breaker, good buddy. You know, you got Smokey on the side of the road here and such and such and such and such.
Yeah, they tell you that.
Yeah.
So really cool. What else I wanted to ask you about? About this woman. You also mentioned, where is it?
I missed
her name. Yes, the police woman, yes. Rita,
yes.
The first permanent African-American female Yonkers police officer, first woman to walk patrol in the state of New York. Are you sitting down for this? You mentioned it. 1964, I can barely remember. I was only 14 years old at that time.
And this is the first time Brian Herod has ever even heard this amazing story. You know, that fortunately they're going to name
it. I never heard of it.
Yeah. It's a part of Yonkers' hidden history. With all the poor racial coverage they had during the previous century, they had this very bright and good story, you know. And she was amazing. She had a good career in the police department. Then I think they hired her at a museum for security. Then she came back to help with the schools, I guess, with wayward children. So quite a woman. It seems to be well liked.
And she moved up to the Hudson River Museum as well.
Yes.
That was amazing. After she retired.
Yes. One thing I've noticed.
That's amazing.
I've run into a lot of people that used to live in Yonkers, you know, and Yonkers produces, I don't know if it's just a resilience factor or what, or maybe just because of the size of it, but produces an awful lot of people who accomplish a great deal. You know, usually there's a few people in each community that's really outstanding, you know, and then there's a like that. But if you tried to compile a list of people in Yonkers that have just done outstanding things in their lifetimes, you would come up a pretty substantial list, you know, just over the last 20, 30, 40 years, or 50 years maybe. But
except there's a problem. You know what the problem is? The problem is that people are so adversarial and so jealous, it's seemingly so, in Yonkers. I don't know if it's more than in any other community, but we don't celebrate the people who've done exceptional work, who exemplify what they do and celebrate their exuberance and their investment of time and effort and why they do what they do. People are reluctant to talk about it, and people are being torn down when they should really be celebrated and emulated.
That's a good point. For this lady to have accomplished so many things and been the first in New York State and all these other things, And how could people not know about, maybe other people knew about her here in the community, but I had no clue. I've never heard her name once, and that's all I do.
I never did either.
Part of the day is Yonkers, Yonkers people, Yonkers news is what I focus on, Yonkers history even, and it's
mm-hmm.
quite a story. But I'm so glad that I believe it was Councilman Anthony Morante brought forth the legislation to try to do this, and the mayor's agreeing, and the city council agreed, and it looks like they're going to at least she'll get a street sign. This woman almost needs a statue somewhere.
I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
It really is special, and we forget about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was very
well, there was another one,
Hezzy.
There was the police officer in Yonkers.
I was thinking
that
exactly the same thing.
They killed 45 years. I knew nothing of it, you know, and they're always saying, well, Yonkers never forgets, but I didn't hear anything of it. I didn't see any annual remembrance of this. And then, but fortunately, they are doing it now. But it seems like Yonkers needs to do a little bit better of telling its story and its history and its people, I think, and honoring
them. Well, that particular officer was forgotten for 45 years. And if it wasn't, thank God, for his wife who remembered him and who doesn't live in Yonkers but came here, I guess to be at his grave site. She brought back the memory of who he was and what he did.
Yes.
And it took 45 years for the city to celebrate someone who really gave their life for this city.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, you know, and I think the press release was unnerving to me, you know, we never forget. Well, God help you, you did forget for 45 years. And if it wasn't for his wife, we would never know. And how dare you all of a sudden make believe that you remembered 45 years later? Give me a break. It riled me up to such an extent I couldn't believe how dumbfounded I was by the temerity of the language of the press notice. I posted it because I said, oh, forget it. It's a joke already. And I bless this woman. Can you imagine being married to a woman who unfortunately had to suffer to raise her children on her own while the city forgot her?
Yes.
In every conceivable way. Even just simply to honor her husband.
Yes.
With a street naming. You know, look, you know what, though? It's hopefully, this is not to portray the city as being obtuse to all these issues and concerns, but hopefully we did learn something, and we will never allow it to happen again.
Yes.
And we should remember right away, while we still remember, instead of forgetting somebody 45 years later. I never met the man or even heard of his name.
Oh,
and
the
I
same.
Was
as of course, I heard of the story, too, but the... you know, at least I guess the city is starting to do it. Maybe they need like a city historian or something, you know, or a volunteer type. I know they got a city poet.
They
maybe
have
they
that.
Oh, they have a historian.
You know, they have that, but you know what? Again,
I don't think I've ever heard anything from the
hack.
City historian. Who is the city historian?
Well, I'd rather not mention it because it doesn't really matter because they're not doing the job.
Yes.
If there was a city historian, which there should be and there is, the point is they're all politically connected.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of celebrating what they want to celebrate and need to celebrate to promote the city of Yonkers, they only promote it through some bullshit rag that is not read by anybody. And that's supposed to mean something? Hey, you know what? They may not know it, but I'm sure they do know it. There is a Yonkers Newswire. There is a Journal News. There is a Yonkers Tribune. There is a Yonkers Insider. There's a Yonkers Times. Instead of looking for favorites, send it all out and celebrate the city instead of playing your stupid, myopic game, which divides
especially
the city
and
creates animosity.
Especially for people who've given their lives or people who've served so outstandingly, like this woman that's going to be, I think she's getting honored today with the street sign, or for people that have accomplished great things in the city, or of things we need to learn about as a city, you know, that did happen that we want to do differently in the future, it should go out to everyone. It should try to reach the most people.
Yeah.
The whole idea is we're a very diverse community, and there's a very diverse ways that people get their information. And like I said, I had no idea there was a city historian. It's just, to me,
that
person needs to really do a much better job of getting the word out.
Yeah, but look at how we celebrate. We got this guy who's the Yonkers Public School superintendent, Dr. Quezada.
Mm-hmm.
What a waste of time in life. What has he done for the city? The answer is nothing. Does he celebrate anything? No. When kids go to school, they don't have to show up to school, and they get elevated to the next class. They graduate. They don't even show up one day in school. Not one day. So we're allowing all these things to happen. In the meantime, more importantly than the crap that he's allowed to happen under his watch. And, like, for example, I understand that he was approached with, hey, there was a real problem. There was a shooting in Texas. Well, guess what? Have we tried to look into whether our schools are secure and safe? I personally know through my sources that the mayor looked into it and approached Quezada for that sort of thing, and Quezada doesn't want to do anything about it. Really? He doesn't want to protect our children under his watch? I say throw the bum out. You know what? And he better not get his pension, because he's a piece of crap, because he doesn't give a shit about our kids. And the point is, that's his job. He should be educating them. He should be protecting them. And he should review whether there's enough safety for our children, because exactly what happened in Connecticut and in Florida and in Texas and so many other places and in Buffalo, and then there was another killing, I understand, yesterday. I didn't have even time to read about it. I'm just astounded by the amount of abuse and guns that are all over the place.
Yes.
And this idiot, it makes believe he's a superintendent of our schools, really? Doing what? And then
one
he's
of the,
slugging it out with a mayor, no less, who wants to protect the children?
Yes.
God damn it.
I hear what you're saying.
He should rot in hell.
That's
the problem in this city, because it's always a cover-up. They never tell you the goddamn truth when it should be. And there should be no silence about this. I'm not even going to waste my time writing this up, because I'm sick of it.
It's some pretty strong words, Hezzy, but I'm in agreement with you that there are many failings in the school. It's just a shame that we spend so much money.
I wouldn't send my kids to school if I knew this was the situation, and are the schools secure? Are they locked? Who's watching the door?
I assume you can't just
don't
walk into the school.
Don't assume anything.
Yeah, but
don't assume. You have to know. When it comes to the protection of people that you love, you're sending them to be protected under the vestige of learning. And the point is, the school system and the school district has to protect everybody under their care during the time that they're there.
Yes.
Otherwise, don't open up. We don't need you to have people barge in and kill people. Hey, remember when I reported about the water that was lead tainted?
Mm-hmm.
And everybody said, oh, it couldn't be. Yes, it was, because they had bottled water there. Why do you think I knew that there was lead in the pipes? Because after I said, well, why do you have bottled water? When can you afford to buy bottled water? Because it was tainted. And then they lied about it as a rationale. And they said it wasn't. It was the spigots. Well, if you're that stupid and you have spigots that would leach out lead, then where were you all this time?
Yeah. It'd be
cheaper than buying
all these students,
for you to figure it out.
Water in a school. I would say this, Hezzy. You hate when I say assume, but the mayor is if what you're saying is based on what you're saying, the mayor is correct that they should look at, make sure the school is hard,
correct
that somebody can't come in there. And I think a weakness in the Yonkers public schools is the lack of counselors and mental health issues. I think I think we mentioned this once before we were talking, that, you know, when the press writes about these horrific events like the one that just happened in Utah or in Texas or upstate mm-hmm. New York, it's some monster has came in there, some white supremacist, and he's just slaughtered all these people, and what the hell is going on? But no one ever looks at the fact that these are actually suicides. And in our society, unfortunately, instead of a suicide note, it's to do this really dramatic killing that I guess gets the person noticed or whatever he thought his concerns were.
Not everybody does it. Not everybody does it for that. That's a very, very simple-minded perspective. It's not wrong. It's
mm-hmm.
not everybody. But you know what? That's not an excuse. The excuse
is that here
you have a superintendent of schools that is
mm-hmm.
not doing his job. And you know what? At the end of the day, he shouldn't be challenging the mayor. But you know who should be challenging him? It should be the Yonkers Board of Education Board of
yes.
Trustees, who are sitting old sycophants who don't do squat, and they're not protecting and doing their job. And that goes from the person in charge of the Yonkers public Board of Education, that directorship, and that
mm-hmm.
group of people have to get their act together, and they're not doing it.
I would agree there too. I would say though, hardening the schools is a good thing, but it's only one small piece of the puzzle. What I was trying to say with this gentleman upstate, I've forgotten his name, the white supremacist, you know, he was wrote a manifesto. It was all about this replacement theory thing, and after he committed this horrendous
act, off the wall.
Yeah, but after
he
committed this horrendous act, the media talked about mm-hmm. the issue that he was worried about, you know what I'm saying? And even though it's a warped issue, and even though he was a very sick person, we never look at these things like they are actual suicides or murder-suicides, and that
it's camouflage. You think that everybody's so smart in the media? Why the hell do they get involved in his BS and his epitaph?
Because everybody
wants
to know why. Why did he do this horrible thing?
There is no why. The man is sick, mentally sick and deranged.
Yes, it's hard to explain the derangement, but he did tell people that he felt like dying and taking people with him, and it was just ignored. He was just a sick puppy, and then he ended up driving 200 miles to do this horrible act. There were signs about this gentleman ahead of time, and I think in the Yonkers Public Schools, if there is an act inside the school, it would probably be from a student or a former student, and one of the weaknesses there is they have very few counselors and they have very few mental health services. It's a very big school district, 27,000 kids, and there's the potential for someone to do it. And you harden schools, you know, kids, they can get in there easy. They know that school, you know what I'm saying? It's people are expecting an outsider.
Okay, so
to come
what's
in.
The solution? Now that you've broached every problem that exists,
I believe,
is not being ameliorated, how do you expect to resolve it? By still maintaining security, by still not hiring new people? You can't tell me that we're not getting enough financial aid from the state and much more money, and we're expecting even more money in taxes through the contractual agreement with the sports betting that's going
uh-huh.
to be permitted. So, you know, come on. You know, we can't be singing the fiddle all the time, forever.
I would say this. With around $700 million, almost three-quarters of $1 billion, you can't tell me that you
mm-hmm.
can't come up with $3, $4, or $5 million that could be used for counselors for all these children and for mental health services.
Do you remember how many schools we have in the city? I don't remember. I can't even
I want to say
it's tell
in
you
a,
how many.
In a, high 20s, if I recall right. Maybe, let's say 30, if it's a rough
all right.
number.
Okay, let's say 30. So how much would it cost, do you think, to have somebody that's involved that would be more aware of what's happening and that would be engaged with, you know, that they would need to hire in order to ameliorate
well, let's say
some of the concerns?
A counselor with all the benefits and the costs associated with it, let's say it's $200,000
uh-huh.
a counselor. So you times that by two, so you maybe $6 million. And you could have one in every single school. And like I said, out of 700-some million, though nearly three-quarters of a billion, that would be a very good investment. And not just for this issue, but for the students have a lot of, you know, that's the age when you have a lot of issues, and when, if they can get addressed at an early age, they often don't turn out to be problems in society later on. You know, if if a person gets treatment early, there's more of a chance.
Maybe it's time for us to look into it. What's the problem? What's $6 million when we're getting more investments and more money is coming in? What's the problem?
To me, that's my question, too. They should be done. And since I've been here, they've been talking about we don't have enough counselors, but they don't. They never seem to hire them. They never seem to.
We don't have enough counselors because we have a recalcitrant superintendent of schools who doesn't give a damn. That's all. Show me different, then I'll shut up. But in the meantime, he hasn't done his work.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
No. Doesn't
cut it.
I'm a harsh critic of the schools. I believe that we spend so much money, and it's a shame that two-thirds of the students cannot read at grade level and can't do basic math, especially as getting out of school.
But that's
especially
because they don't
when we were just talking
school.
Before about
don't you understand? They don't attend school. You could sign in and never show up for the rest of the year, and they graduate you despite the fact that you've never been there, never take a test, and that's it. And they graduate you to the point where you will become homeless by the time you get out of high school. And yet they have the audacity, through this idiot by the name of Geraldine Feirstein, who's supposed to be their communication idiot, who tells you that the graduation level at the Yonkers Board of Education is 87%. Really? You find me those 87%. You can't find 8%.
I think they're even saying now in the 90s, Hezzy.
I couldn't care less. There's no difference to me whether it's 87 or 95. The point
is
they are
not
graduating. They're not graduating.
Yeah.
They are being pushed out the door.
I'd say it's a focus on quantity and not quality. You know, they are graduating people, but they're not well educated. They're very poorly educated.
I don't know what you mean by graduating. Just because we passed you and we don't care if you ever took a test and you're never there in school, what did you learn? What test did you take that says you're now be able to move from one class to the next class? What school did you go to that they allowed you to do that? Stop speculating about this.
This social promotion, I guess, is a rather new thing, but
it doesn't work in any country in the world.
Years ago,
it doesn't work in any country in the world. Did you hear me? Never anywhere. You don't graduate unless you graduate by having test scores that allow you to graduate. You get left behind until you pass the course.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. That's the way it works everywhere.
Yeah.
It works like that in Europe. It works like that in South America. It works like that in Asia. Works like that everywhere. Except maybe in Yonkers it doesn't matter. Oh, how sweet it is. Really, that's great.
I'll say this. It's been a problem for a long time, and it just seems to be getting worse. I remember reading an article about, the Mary J. Blige, that was the artist that had originally been in Yonkers.
Yep.
And she talked about after she became successful, she actually had to kind of take remedial education things because you know, she couldn't balance a checkbook, she couldn't understand these contracts, she didn't know what these words meant. So it's been a problem. And then, like I said before, it used to be common if someone didn't perform well, they held them back a year. But now it's this social promotion, and sadly, and like I said, in Yonkers, people graduate, but they can't read at grade level, and they can't do basic math. And it's just some do very well, some are very resilient,
but
some don't.
They can lie on the street and get on the sidewalk in Getty Square, writhing because they're on drugs or some other problem, and can't get by, or they're wandering the streets homeless. This is what we're graduating. Is this the best we could do?
The failures in the school visit us later on
really?
In society. It's the failures in this school do visit us later on in society. If you don't want to pay for it while they're in school to make the school operate efficiently,
how do you think
properly,
we're paying for it now?
you'll end up paying for it, like you say, with some of the issues that are on the streets now in Yonkers.
Yeah, doesn't quite cut it. And it's so
easy. You can't get a job, maybe
and
you
know what?
Work children
crime,
want and maybe
to
that
learn.
Increases
children
gang
want
violence.
To learn.
Yeah.
Children want to learn. They don't want to
agree.
Be left behind. And they want to excel. And they all want a good job. And they have a lot of issues that concern them, whether it be financial or other biases because of ethnicity or sex or sexual preference or all those things. But that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to help them elevate to the point of adulthood.
And
that's
it's doable, Hesse. I would say this.
I know
the lady we were talking about before, the nurse that this Charter School
yes.
of Education hired at 72 to take care of children.
Right.
There was no bias, no age
mm-hmm.
bias against her. She could do it.
Right.
She was educated. She had the ability to do this.
Qualification. Mm-hmm.
When they take the students in Yonkers, it's by a lottery. You know what I'm saying? So it's just
okay.
There's no cherry picking the Yonkers Public Schools. They just get, the whatever student's
it's
lucky
every
number
public
comes
school's
up.
The same. Nobody's
yeah,
cherry
so,
picking anything. Nobody's
no,
cherry picking in Mount Vernon. Nobody's cherry picking in Brownsville.
No, you're missing my point,
nobody's cherry picking in Scarsdale. Nobody's cherry picking in Yorktown. Give me
I'm
a
saying,
break. Nobody
no,
does
I'm
that.
Saying in this charter school does it by lottery. Your number has to come up where you get in. It's just random. So they get these random
okay.
students into their school,
mm-hmm.
and they perform very highly. This school is like out of 295 charter schools, it's like in the top 10 or 11. And the students do very well and have a very high graduation rate like the Yonkers Public Schools, but these kids can read, they can do math,
except,
and they excel in a lot of other areas. And they go to college.
Do you know why that is? You're talking, but do you know why that is?
It's an effective program. It's properly ran.
Say that again?
It's an effective educational program. It's properly ran, in my opinion. And,
right. and there's
the Yonkers Public Schools
can
learn a lot from this charter
how
school.
How is it probably run? You see, this is where you miss the point. It is probably run because there is a sensibility in the administration that demands a certain level of complexity and knowledge and deference to the kids that they're supposed to teach and knowledge of the product that they're supposed to teach them. And the bottom line is there's a sense of camaraderie and support from the administration and the teachers and the superintendents that are there that are supposed to function together.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we don't have in the Yonkers Public School. It is an abysmal, a waste of time, and it is corrupt from the top down. Because the Board of Education, Board of Trustees don't do their job, because Cazada, who's the superintendent of school, doesn't do their job, because they're all in it for the money, and they're not in there to teach our kids. That's the difference. It is a camaraderie. In the same way that there's a milieu and an environment in any big business, there has to be one also in the schools. And guess what? The people who get eviscerated for doing their job, the principals of the school who are being undermined by the administration of Cazada and also the Yonkers Board of Education Board of Trustees. This is the atrocity that is never told, and you know what? There are no excuses. There are a million and one that you can come up with, but none of them are valid. Because if they were valid, then every school in the entire nation would be saying exactly the same thing. But guess what? We're very unique. We come up with excuses. Do they have the same excuses in the Bronx? I don't think so. Do they have the same excuses in Manhattan or Brooklyn or Queens? I don't think so. Do they have the same excuse in Portchester? I know they don't. So give me a break.
Well, I would say this charter school does show that that by their scores where they are higher than the average score in Yonkers and higher than the average score of Westchester schools combined and
mm-hmm.
getting this recognition and just of having random students, whoever's number comes up in this lottery has shown that
mm-hmm.
they the Yonkers Public School System gets young, bright minds, and if they get an opportunity to go to this charter school, they excel. If they get an opportunity to go to the Yonkers Public Schools, there is a minority of students that will succeed, but most will not read a grade level and not be able to do basic math and not go to college.
Well, that's the issue.
Yeah.
That's the only issue.
Yeah.
Everything else that's standing in their way is atrocious and should be thrown on their rear end because they're not doing their job. Why are we paying them $200,000, $300,000 a year to do what? To get people to grow up, and time doesn't stand by. Every year passes by, you get another birthday before you know it. You're just simply a person who has no clue on anything, and you now.
Are you there?
Okay, we had gotten disconnected, unfortunately, and we may have disconnected Brian. I thought that I don't know what happened exactly, so he may call back. I'm just not quite sure. In the meantime, so let me just quickly go back to where we were before, and we'll cover up some. We'll cover some other things which are going to be very interesting, as I'm sure you've already heard. The United Kingdom is celebrating the Queen Elizabeth II's Platinum Jubilee. So Queen Elizabeth II has been a British institution since 1952, navigating all crises, political or within her family, with dignity and resolve. 4 days of festivities mark her Platinum Jubilee. Unbelievable. So Queen Elizabeth II is holding a number of remarkable records. She's the oldest reigning monarch and had the longest marriage in the British royal family. Even her coronation made television history. Never before had there been so many viewers, 300 million people worldwide. She's also the longest reigning British monarch to date. Only two more years and she will have caught up with a French Sun King, Louis XIV, in office from 1643 to 1715, with 72 years of regency. God willing, she'll make it. The Queen has proved to be quite unflappable over the past 70 years. She can be relied upon to face crises unflinchingly. As far as she's concerned, feelings do not belong in the public eye. She always has a warm smile, a friendly wave at the ready for her subjects, and people enjoy a public celebration for her birthday every year at the beginning of June. Well, in 2022, there will not be one, but two additional days off for people in the United Kingdom to give them the opportunity to celebrate both the Queen's birthday and Platinum anniversary. So this year, everything is on a grander scale. On June 2nd, today, the celebrations begin with Trooping the Colour, a unique military parade that has been performed for centuries on the occasion of the birthday of a British regent, regardless of the actual birthday date. And Elizabeth's birthday is on April 21st. Jubilee beacons will be lit throughout the United Kingdom on the Channel Islands, on the Isle of Man, in the British Overseas Territories, and in each of the 54 Commonwealth capitals. Well, the next day, a service of thanksgiving for Elizabeth II's long reign is scheduled at St. Paul's Cathedral in London. On June 4th, the BBC hosts a live concert at Buckingham Palace. The Platinum at the Palace show features Queen and Adam Lambert and Diana Ross, Hans Zimmer, Sir Rod Stewart, and George Ezra, Duran Duran, Andrea Bocelli, Nile Rodgers, and many more. Sam Ryder, who won a sensational second place for the United Kingdom at the 2022 Eurovision Song Contest, will also be on stage, as will celebrities from the world of cinema and sport, including Sir David Attenborough, Emma Raducanu, David Beckham, Stephen Fry, Dame Julie Andrews, and the Royal Ballet. There will also be a special appearance by Sir Elton John. It is also the day of the Epsom Derby. or Derby, considered the oldest horse race in the world. On June 5th, sees that what is being called the Big Jubilee Lunch in the streets of urban neighborhoods and villages across the country, with long tables laden with food and drinks. More than 200,000 such parties are expected. Well, Elizabeth wasn't meant to be the British monarch. She wasn't even a crown princess. And that changed when her uncle, Edward VIII, abdicated the throne, and her father, George VI, became king as the next in line to the throne. She was 25 years old when her father died on February 6th, that's my brother's birthday, in 1952, and she became queen that same day, or that same night. And British Princess Elizabeth, called Lilibet, became Elizabeth II, by the grace of God, Queen of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland and her other realms and territories, head of the Commonwealth, defender of the faith, and on June 2nd of 1950, crowned in a grand ceremony at Westminster Abbey. As a young queen, Elizabeth experienced the fall of the British Empire, witnessed the Cold War, and most recently saw Brexit and the coronavirus pandemic. She has received 14 prime ministers, from Winston Churchill and Margaret Thatcher to Boris Johnson at Buckingham Palace. Early in her reign, Elizabeth faced issues with her sister Margaret, scandals, parties, affairs, and the first divorce in the British royal family in about 400 years. She married Prince Philip in 1947. The couple had four children, her eldest son and heir to the throne, Charles, and Lady Diana, married in a lavish ceremony in 1981, but it quickly turned out the marriage was a disaster. All her children except the youngest son, Edward, ended up getting divorced. One of the Queen's six grandchildren, Prince Harry, has broken away from the royal family. Her son, Prince Andrew, has been a cause of concern for years because he is involved in a sex scandal and could face a sexual assault trial in the United States later in the year. His mother stood by him for a long time, but in mid-January 2022, she withdrew all military ranks and royal patronage. Diana's 1997 death in a car crash had an impact on the Queen, too, but she was hardest hit by the loss of her beloved husband of 73 years, Philip, who died on April 9 of 2021, shortly before her 95th birthday, and he would have turned 100. Harry and Meghan fly in. It seems the Queen expects a very special visitor from the United States on her anniversary weekend, Prince Harry, Duchess Meghan, and their two children, Archie and Lilibet Diana. Since the prince and his wife stepped back as senior royals and left the United Kingdom for California, the couple made a brief visit in Easter, and this time they brought along their children, giving great-grandma Elizabeth the opportunity to meet Lilibet, who was named after the Queen's family pet name, and congratulate her on her first birthday on June 4. So, really, really fascinating. What a history, what a legacy. A truly amazing, truly, truly amazing. Let's quickly look at what's going on in Ukraine. So why Ukraine's Severodonetsk is so important. Severodonetsk is a significant industrial center in eastern Ukraine. It is also where pro-Russian separatism first started in the Donbas region almost 20 years ago. So barely 2 weeks after the last Ukrainian soldiers in the port city of Mariupol surrendered to the Russian army in hopes of a prisoner swap, Ukraine may lose yet another major center in the Donbas, the city of Severodonetsk. Reportedly, there is fighting in the streets, and Russian soldiers are said to have advanced to the city center. Severodonetsk and neighboring Lysychansk are the last major cities in the Luhansk area. The Donetsk and Luhansk regions are known collectively as the Donbas, still controlled by Kyiv. According to Ukrainian general staff, Russia is intent on capturing Severodonetsk. Ukrainian soldiers defending the region risk being trapped as they were in Mariupol. Before the war, the city had a population of about 100,000. In the Soviet era, a settlement near the Azov chemical plant, the largest in Ukraine, grew to become a new city. Not far from Luhansk, Donetsk and Kharkiv. It was named Kivirodonetsk after the river Kiversky Donets in the 1950s. Dmytro Pirtash, an oligarch and media magnate who settled in Austria in 2014 and is threatened with extradition to the United States on suspicion of corruption, owns the Azot plant, which mainly produces fertilizers that for the most part are exported. Like many other factories in the region, the Azot plant in recent years grappled with suspended production due to the conflict in the Donbas. Severodonetsk is home to several other chemical plants too, while Lysychansk was home to Russian-owned oil refinery that has long since ceased operations. Well, the Donbas separation. Severodonetsk was also known for the fact that for the first attempt to divide Ukraine was made there almost 20 years ago. On November 28 of 2004, the so-called All-Ukrainian Congress of Deputies of all levels convened in the city, attended mainly by representatives of the pro-Russian Party of Regions. The party, formed in the Donbas, dominated the region against the backdrop of the pro-Western Orange Revolution protest in the capital, Kyiv. It threatened to declare autonomy, with Kharkiv as its center and including eight eastern and southern Ukrainian regions as well as Crimea and Sevastopol. Well, Moscow Mayor Yuri Lushkov, who had worked at the Azot plant when he was a young man, was a featured speaker at the 2004 Congress. Later, Lushkov was made an honorary citizen of Severodonetsk at a time when the Ukrainian authorities had already banned him from entering the country for making separatist statements concerning Sevastopol. The initiators of the All-Ukrainian Congress didn't go beyond general threats in 2004. For many observers, however, the meeting marks the first, albeit unsuccessful, attempt at a formal political split of Ukraine. The next attempt came 10 years later, in the spring and summer of 2014, after the Russian annexation of the Ukrainian peninsula of Crimea. Armed local separatists from Russia occupied the three neighboring cities of Severodonetsk, Lysychansk, and Lubichne. Well, the Ukrainian army liberated the region in July of 2014, and Severodonetsk became the regional military civil administrative administration center, and various institutions and universities moved there from Luhansk. In 2022, they moved again, this time to western Ukraine. So Severodonetsk and neighboring Lysychansk are of strategic importance because this part of the Donbas connects with other regions of Ukraine. The main focus is on the highway connecting Lysychansk and Bakhmut in Donetsk region. It is used to supply the Ukrainian military. It is also used to evacuate citizens before the route became too dangerous because of shelling. And capturing Severodonetsk and Lysychansk would allow the Russian army to reach the region's administrative border. And from there, the Russian army could advance further west toward Kramatorsk, another administrative center in the Donetsk region, and Kramatorsk is one of the last major industrial cities still fully controlled by Kyiv in the Donbas. So, and this was originally written in Russian, so you know, just so you know. Okay, now, this is fascinating. Thank God for this game. Ukraine is one step away from the World Cup after a win over Scotland. Ukraine at the World Cup, despite the war at home and months without competitive preparation, Oleksandr Petrakov's team is one step away from Qatar, where the FIFA games will play after beating Scotland. Next is a playoff final against Wales in Cardiff. One second. So, after 98 days of war following the Russian invasion of their country, Ukraine wins over Scotland 3-1. Well, Ukraine's exiled national team kept their 2022 World Cup dream alive by beating Scotland 3-1 in a first playoff game in Glasgow. West Ham United's St. Petersburg-born striker Andriy Yarmolenko put Ukraine ahead before halftime with a neat lob over Scottish goalkeeper Craig Gordon. The four Benficas, Roman Yaremchuk, doubled the lead after the break with a precise back post header from Alexander Karavayev's cross. McCallum McGregor gave Scotland hope with 10 minutes remaining when his long-range effort evaded Gordon and crossed the line. Ukraine's captain Taras Stepanenko's attempt to clear. Well, Scotland poured forward in search of an equalizer, which would have taken the game to extra time. But with the 4 minutes of injury time already up, Ukraine counterattacked. Artem Dovbyk breaking clear to make it 3-1 and set up a playoff final against Wales in Cardiff on Sunday. Thank God for this game, Ukraine and Manchester City defender Oleksandr Zinchenko told UEFA.com. We just tried to play our best game and send positive emotions and feelings to all of the Ukrainian fans who are watching. Outside Hampden Park, Scotland fans applauded their Ukrainian counterparts in recognition of both their team's sporting performance and the desperate situation in their homeland. We have to be honest and say the better team won, admitted Scotland coach Steve Clark. They stopped us having the ball. This was Ukrainians' night, not Scotland's. So Ukraine are now just one win away from the first World Cup appearance since Germany 2006 against the Wales side, which lost their Nations League opener 2-1 against Poland on Wednesday. Every game is like a final, said Zinchenko. We've dreamt of the World Cup as a team, and now it's just one game away. It'll be a huge game for us. We all need to have the game of our lives, and then we'll see what happens. Ahead of the Scotland game, Ukraine head coach Oleksandr Petrakov, a man of few words, had told Deutsche Welle about the responsibility he feels in charge of the national team given the current circumstances. Quote, he says, I feel a great responsibility for our fans at home, for our armed forces, for the ordinary people who are at home in Ukraine right now, he said. It's a big responsibility for me and for the boys, end quote. What was once purely a sporting affair has become an important national distraction. Football is not the most important thing at the moment, explains Ukrainian historian Katerina Chernyi. But the national team games are an opportunity for the people of Ukraine and the refugees to experience something together. Like the recent Ukrainian Eurovision triumph, there is a yearning for good news. It's an opportunity for us to draw attention to the situation in our homeland, midfielder Serhii Sidorchuk advised, but it's an even tougher task than normal for two reasons. Firstly, a lack of match practice. As recently as November, Sidorchuk played in the Champions League for Dynamo Kyiv against Bayern Munich. But since the beginning of the winter break, there have been no more competitive matches for Ukrainian clubs or the national team. To prepare for Scotland, Petrakov gathered his squad abroad near Ljubljana in Slovenia. Friendlies have been arranged to try and get the squad fit. And this has meant a lot of traveling to Tuscany, Croatia, and Germany, where the Ukrainians played against Bundesliga, the German league club of Borussia Mönchengladbach. Well, the second reason is perhaps obvious: the players are directly affected by the war. We all have the same things in our soul, in our heads, in conversation, said Sidorchuk. His coach agrees. I called my wife and daughter just now. They say it's quiet today. Everything's fine. All the boys are calling. Everyone is worried about their relatives, of course. You have doubts, said Coach Petrakov. Some players, like the goalkeeper Andriy Pyatov, have been here before. In 2014, he had to flee with his family when pro-Russian separatists declared independence for the Donetsk People's Republic. And since then, his club, Shakhtar Donetsk, have played in the capital, Kyiv. There, he and his family again had to endure shelling and war. The Russian invasion remains incomprehensible to Ukrainians. As in many other areas, the two countries were closely intertwined in football. In Soviet times, the joint 11 celebrated its greatest successes under Ukrainian coach Valery Lobanovsky. when they finished runners-up at the 1988 European Championship in the same year under the guidance of his compatriot Anatoly Bishovitz. The USSR won Olympic gold against Brazil. For a long time, players from Ukraine formed the spine of the Soviet 11 with names like Oleksiy Mikhailochenko or Oleg Blokhin, familiar across Europe. A few years after the collapse of the Soviet Empire for Ukraine to become a truly competitive team, but it has precisely it was precisely during this period that the national team played an enormously important role on the path to becoming an independent nation. It was an anchor of identity for the people of Ukraine, explains historian Chernyi. There are now several of these new anchors, but the pull of football is still great, especially at important tournaments. This was really noticeable for the first time in the 2006 World Cup in Germany. After Coach Blokhin, the team were a sensation. They only lost to eventual world champions Italy in the quarterfinals. And since Euro 2012 in their home country, the team in yellow and blue have participated in every European championship. "We know the burden on our shoulders," said Sidorchuk ahead of the Scotland game. But at the same time, he didn't want to complain. The team, he said, is privileged compared to the people at war. "Back home, young men are fighting and dying in the trenches," said Petrakov. 64-year-old coach volunteered for territorial defense in Kyiv after the war broke out, but was turned down due to a lack of military experience and his upcoming assignment. Attracting attention, making positive headlines, that is now his mission. "The players are determined to give their best in Glasgow," Sidorchuk had stressed. "We all live for this game and hope we succeed in everything." They passed the first test against Scotland with flying colors. Now they need to repeat the trick against Wales on Sunday. That will be unbelievable. What a game. Unbelievable. My God, Sunday's right around the corner. Well, there we are. Let's see, tomorrow's Friday. I'm not exactly sure if we're going to be able to speak to the New York State Assembly member, Nader Sage. He's sometimes available, sometimes not on Fridays. So we'll have to check. I'll check with his office in a few minutes and see where things are. So that's our story. Thank you for being with us today. All the best. Hopefully you'll catch us tomorrow. Be well. Goodbye.